today as we come to the table.
Go to the prophet, find out what he says about this, the son of Amoz, Isaiah. And they said to him, thus says Hezekiah, this day is a day of trouble and rebuke and blasphemy. Again, trouble and rebuke from the enemy, but also blasphemy, because they were saying, your God can't deliver you. They were challenging God. Now, by the way, and we'll see, he brings this up in a minute. If you're ever in a place where you need God to move in a great way and somebody in your situation has challenged God, that's a great place to be. It really is. If they challenge you, okay, well, God, I need your help. Please help, Lord. I hope you intervene. You don't know if you will, what's going to happen. I don't know what your will is in this. But when they challenge God, God's going to defend his name.
Just like we'll see with Hezekiah, God sometimes allows difficult things to happen so his faithfulness can shine through. God uses hardships to shape us and to reveal his goodness to us and to those who witness what's happening. Our lives, including the ups and downs, are a testament to God's goodness. Well, thanks for taking the time to join us as we come to the table, the daily Bible study program of Mark Kirk, Senior Pastor of Calvary Knoxville. In today's message, Pastor Mark will remind you that when people question or challenge your beliefs, God will back you 100% of the time. When hard times come, and they will come, people will ask where your God is. And the way you allow God to shape you will be proof of his love and faithfulness. Now, let's join Pastor Mark in the book of Isaiah, chapter 35, with today's edition of Come to the Table.
There'll be this highway leading up to this place, and as we're walking up, we'll all be singing and praising the Lord. We'll probably see the glow of the Lord coming off of Jerusalem as we get there. As we get closer, we'll hear the choirs and the angels and everyone singing as we get ready to get in the excitement building. There's going to be the stream coming off the side of it, the water running down probably under the bridge. I don't know for sure, but I picture that in my mind. Maybe not, but either way, if that's cool, we'll be up on this highway looking over the edge, you know, and we'll see that beautiful water rushing under us and the beautiful sparkling and the freshness of the air and the beautiful trees and the green and the fish and the animals. And it's going to be great. And then we're going to get into Jerusalem, and then we're going to walk in. There'll just be the praises going on and all kinds of banqueting and tables and food and rejoicing and praising. And then that's day one. I don't know how many days. You have to do the math for me, how many 1,000 years is, 1,000 times 365 or whatever the days are on the time. But that's day one. We have 1,000 years of that. And no sorrow, just rejoicing, celebrating. Now, we're not going to be going up there every day, but you get the point. We'll be traveling on a regular basis up there, and then whatever God has us doing. And then when that's done, you know what's going to happen? We're all going to walk up that highway of holiness. We'll all get into Jerusalem. And it tells us in Revelation, I'm opening up a can of worms because we don't have time to get into it, but you'll have to read the Word of God and trust me on this. Satan's going to be released at the end of that 1,000 years. And he's going to gather the people on the earth that have been born during that time that don't want to follow Jesus. And we're going to be in that glorious Jerusalem there with the Lord. They're all going to come against us and try to wipe us out. And the Bible says the Lord is going to go, and they're done. And then he's going to dissolve this earth. He's going to dissolve the heaven that we now know. And he's going to make a brand new heaven and a brand new earth that has never been tainted by sin from us or the fallen angels. And then it just starts all over again forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. Besides that, I have no good news for you tonight. Is this great or what? I mean, when you meditate on it, I just think about it and I meditate on it and I go, oh my goodness, you know, and you think, well, and this is why does the Lord want us to know this? Because right now it can be hard, can't it? It can be hard. Some of you have very, very difficult situations. I was thinking of it the other day. Look, life is hard enough without all the other things that are happening in the last days. You know, before the last days kicked in and all the, you know, the increase in all the stuff that we're seeing, the earthquakes and the death and now the plagues and viruses and the world getting weird and becoming one world government and the oppression we feel of the enemy moving in. Okay, before all that happened, it was already difficult enough at times, wasn't it? Just trying to survive. Well, now we have that and this on top of it. So the Lord wants you to know how great it's about to be so you can say, you know what? I can do this. I can do this for this short amount of time. I can handle this. I remember, I think it was Tracy saying one time, you know, I can do anything for 2 weeks. You know, really, no matter how hard it is, I can survive anything for 2 weeks. I don't know why 2 weeks, but either way, that's what she said. But I think that's, think about it. We can survive when we realize there's a great reward at the end. Some of you that have been into athletics, if you're ever a runner and you've run long distance or you've been involved in whatever summer sports or whatever thing might be, you think, okay, I know this. You got something wonderful planned afterwards. You know, you're going to get a shower and all the Gatorade and go out and eat and have some fun or whatever. You can endure this last 30 minutes of this coach yelling at you and you're dying or whatever the case might be. That's kind of where we are now. We're kind of under the pressure of the enemy and the world, but we have a great feasting time and rejoicing afterwards that's never going to go away. It's just great. Anyway, I'm excited about it. All right, I've said enough about it. Chapter 35, now we come back down to earth. I'm just kidding. There's nothing to be sad about. It's great. Anyway. Now we get into chapter 36, and look what it says. It says, now it came to pass in the 14th year of King Hezekiah that Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and took them. So now we see the Assyrians coming in, getting ready to take over that whole region. Remember now, the Assyrians were the world power at this time. And then when the Assyrians fade out, which is going to be very soon, then Babylon starts to rise up 100 to 150 years later. We'll see Babylon taking everything over. And so they're the next major kingdom to come on the scene. But right now, Babylon's really a nobody. Assyria is ruling the world. They're taking over the whole region there of Judah. And verse 2, then the king of Assyria sent to the Rabshakeh with a great army from Lachish to King Hezekiah at Jerusalem. And he stood by the aqueduct from the upper pool. That is, they were down at Lachish. They just conquered Lachish. And by the way, let me give you the setting. Before they show up and start telling them at Jerusalem what's going on, when the Assyrians went in, they were brutal. They were brutal. I don't want to give you too much detail, but I'm going to give you some because you need to know what they were thinking about when they were being told these things by the Assyrians inside Jerusalem and the fear that would have been in their heart. What they would do is they would go take over a city, and Lachish had been the most recent one. They would go and take all the men, and they'd put poles in the ground, sharp poles that are sharp on the top, and take the men alive and just impale them down on the pole, drop them down on it. And they left them there, just their body on that pole. They died that way. And they would just, again, rape the women, take the children as slaves. So they cut out their tongues, cut off their ears. They would skin them, put their skins on the walls of the city. I mean, okay, enough information. The point is, imagine knowing that. They're down at Lachish doing that right now, and messengers from their army come up to you and say, guess what, you guys are next. And nobody else has been able to stop them. Nobody. So now you have the setting. They show up. It says, the king of Assyria sent the Rabshakeh, that wasn't his name, that was a title, was one of his commanders, with a great army from Lachish to King Hezekiah at Jerusalem. And he stood by the aqueduct at the upper pool on the highway to the Fuller's Field. That is down really at the lower portion of the city of David. I know you have all these upper words and upper that. The upper pool, the Gihon, it goes down to the lower pool of Siloam. Those of you that have been to Israel, you can picture this in your mind. But if you picture Jerusalem in your mind and you see the Temple Mount right in front of you, go down to the left, that hill that slants down, that's the city of David. It had a wall around it as well. And that toward the bottom of the city of David, that's where they are. They're on the wall down there. The men are now gathered down there at that lower area. They've come up from Lachish, which is down from that lower region coming up toward Jerusalem. So that was the first place they'd come to. So they're down there in that, and they're talking to the guys that are there up on the wall. You could easily talk to them. It's not a long distance. Even though the walls were fairly high, it would have been very easy to hear each other. And it says, and Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, Shebna the scribe, and Joah the son of Asaph, the recorder, came to him. So they stood by the aqueduct there, the upper pool, and they come down there to talk to them. Then the Rabshakeh said to them, say now to Hezekiah, thus says the great king. By the way, Hezekiah's house would have been right at the top of the hill. Okay, that's where the palace was. So you go up from the bottom up to the top, and then from there you went on up onto the Temple Mount. So the king's palace was kind of right between the Temple Mount and where they are down here at the bottom. So King Hezekiah is up here at his home. The messengers are down there. They're giving them the message. They're coming up to tell Hezekiah. Rabshakeh said to them, say now to Hezekiah, thus says the king of Assyria, what confidence is this in which you trust? Now, notice the title he gives himself. I'm the great king, you know. And again, at that time, he was the ruling king, but he calls himself the great king. He says, what are you trusting in? I say you speak of having plans and power for war, but they're mere words. In other words, you can't stop me. He says, now, in whom do you trust that you rebel against me? He's about to find out, isn't he? He says, look, you're trusting in the staff of this broken reed, Egypt. on which if a man leans, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, to all those who trust in him. So it's a real, you know, very picturesque here. It's like you're leaning on something and it breaks and the, you know, it stabs into your hand because the wooden, you know, beam, you know, pole breaks or whatever. Egypt was on its way down. Egypt was losing its power as a power. Assyria was the power at the time. And because of that, Israel was connected to Egypt, always sending down saying, come help us, come help us. And Egypt would come up and help Israel. They would pay them. They worked together. They were allies at that time. So they had been contacting Egypt. He knew they would probably go down to Egypt. He's saying, don't try to run to Egypt. They're not going to be able to help you. We're greater than Egypt. Egypt's on their way down. We're going to wipe out Egypt. We're going to take Egypt out of the way. They're not an issue. They're not going to help you. We're conquering everything in this area. So don't think they're going to get you out of this. So you've lost all hope. And we're going to do to you what we did to Lachish if you don't surrender. But if you say to me, we trust in the Lord our God, is it not he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah has taken away and said to Judah and Jerusalem, you shall not worship before this altar? Now, he didn't understand what had happened. Again, remember, Israel had the God of Israel, right? Hezekiah was honoring the God of Israel. He was a good king. And when Hezekiah came into power, he tore down all the other false gods' idols. I mean, all their altars. He tore their idols down too, but also their altars. He destroyed all their altars. So Hezekiah, being a multiple God worshiper from another land, being unsaved and not knowing the God of Israel, he says, look, every land has its gods. And all you did when you came into power, you destroyed all your God's altars. You got rid of all your God's altars. And now you think those gods are going to help you after you destroyed all their altars? What he didn't realize is, no, I was actually honoring my God by destroying all those false gods' altars. And now my God's going to help me even more. But he didn't understand that. So from his mindset, you've killed all your gods. You've run them off. They're not going to help you. Or didn't kill them, but you've dishonored them. So they're not going to help you. Now, therefore, I urge you, give a pledge to my master, the king of Assyria. And I'll give you 2,000 horses if you're able to, on your part, to put riders on them. In other words, we will conquer you so handily that if you can find 2,000 soldiers that are willing to come out and fight us, we'll give you the horses to fight us. You know, we'll give you the equipment to fight against us. You're going to get beaten so bad. You don't have your gods? You can't beat us even if we give you part of our army? What do you think you're doing? Just give up. You want to be impaled on poles as well? You want your wives raped? You want your children to become our slaves? What are you doing? He says, because I'm taking over this whole region. How then will you repel even one captain of the least of my master's servants and put your trust in Egypt for chariots and horsemen? Have I now come up without the Lord against this land to destroy it? The Lord said to me, go up against this land, destroy it. God didn't tell him that. But probably he's thinking his Lord. He may have heard a spirit telling him that, but it wasn't the Lord of Israel. And so he's like, well, I know this. And the spirit, my Lord, whoever they would do all their incantations to hear from their gods, he's the one who told me to come do this. So even, you know, he's against you. Everybody's against you. Give up. Then Eliakim and Shebna and Joah said to Rabshakeh, please speak to your servants in Aramaic, for we understand that. And do not speak to us in Hebrew in the hearing of the people on the wall. Like, look, if this is a diplomatic meeting and you want to do diplomatic, you know, agreements here, stop speaking in Hebrew. The people speak Hebrew, but we know Hebrew and Aramaic. Or rather, the people speak in Aramaic. He said, so speak to us. Wait a minute. Let me make sure I got that right. Yeah, speak to us. Yeah, speak to your servants in Aramaic. That's right, because the people, again, spoke Hebrew. So speak to us in Aramaic so they won't hear what you're saying. All the people speak Hebrew. We speak both Hebrew and Aramaic. So speak in a language that we know, but that the people don't get afraid. We'll negotiate with you, but don't make the people afraid. Now, again, they're not going to pay attention to that. It's like, no, we want your people to be afraid. We're not going to listen to that. You're telling us not so they can't understand. Because the people are not gathering as they're talking. The crowds are hearing them. They see the army down there below. They're coming to hear what's going on. And they hear them saying all these things, getting afraid. But the Rabshakeh said, has my master sent me to your master to speak to you these words and not to the men who sit on the wall who will eat and drink their own waste with you? Again, when they would do these sieges, I know it's gross. But if you have no food and water, you eat whatever you can get your hands on. And that would be oftentimes human waste. And so, again, when they would die, they would even convert to, in some instances historically, to cannibalism. And so he's saying, you're going to be eating all this horrible stuff, your own waste, you're going to be eating it, and you don't want your people to know? No, I'm going to speak in Hebrew. I want them to hear so that they'll convince you to surrender and give up. You don't have a chance. Then the Rabshakeh stood and called out with a loud voice in Hebrew. Now it's even louder. And said, hear the words of the great king. And I want everybody on the wall to hear. The king of Assyria, thus says the king, do not let Hezekiah deceive you, for he will not be able to deliver you, nor let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord will surely deliver us. This city will not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Do not listen to Hezekiah. For thus says the king of Assyria, make peace with me by a present and come out to me, and every one of you eat from his own vine and from his own fig tree. Every one of you drink from the waters of his own cistern. In other words, if you surrender, I'll let you stay at your own house until, notice that, verse 17, you can stay, have your own vineyard, your own home, whatever, until, I'm going to let you do it for now, but you can't do it forever because I'm taking over, until I come and take you away to a land like your own land, a land of grain and new wine, a land of bread and vineyards. So I'm going to take you out of here, take you back to Assyria, relocate there. And I'm taking it, but for now, I'll at least let you stay at your place if you surrender rather than impaling you all and killing you and doing all these horrible things. Beware lest Hezekiah persuade you, saying, the Lord will deliver us. Has any one of the gods of the nations delivered its land from the hand of the king of Assyria? No, that's true. They hadn't. All the other gods and all the other lands have been defeated, but we're going to get to Hezekiah's response here in a minute. He's like, yeah, but Lord, they weren't really gods. You alone are God. So I wouldn't expect them to be able to deliver them. They're nothing but pieces of wood and stone. It's not going to help anybody. He said, those gods weren't able to help or deliver. Where are the gods of Hamath and Arpad? Where are the gods of Sepharvaim? Indeed, have they delivered Samaria from my hand? Who among all the gods of these lands have delivered their countries from my hand that the Lord should deliver Jerusalem from my hand? But they held their peace and answered him not a word, for the king's commandment was, do not answer them. Then Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, who was over the household, Shebna the scribe, and Joash the son of Asaph, the recorder, came to Hezekiah with their clothes torn and told him the words of the Rabshakeh. Remember, whenever there was some great tragedy, they would tear their clothes. It was a sign of we're in big trouble. We are torn. And we have to do something. And they would literally tear their clothes. And so they go with their clothes torn. And notice this, chapter 37. So it was when King Hezekiah heard it that he tore his clothes. So everybody's got torn clothes now. And he covered himself with sackcloth and he went into the house of the Lord. Now, a couple things I want you to notice here. Notice what happened when the threat came, when the fear came, when the total devastation, when the hopelessness came. What did Hezekiah do? He ran to the house of the Lord. Here's the point. He sought out God. And you guys are obviously doing that. You're here tonight. You're seeking out God. But this is the answer to anybody in despair. If you're in despair tonight, if you've got friends in despair, if you've got people, what do? I don't know what to do. Run to the house of the Lord. Get involved in fellowship. Hear the word of the Lord. Let God's spirit, you know, it's one thing. When we had that, I know a lot of people during the whole situation of the COVID thing stayed home. And of course, and again, I know a lot of you were here and we were open during that time, but a lot of churches closed down. And to hear him talk about having to watch for a couple of years online, it just wasn't the same. You watch it, but there's nothing like being in the presence of God's people as God pours his spirit out. It's just different. And we need that. And God knows we need that. And so Hezekiah does the right thing. He runs to the Lord and cries out to the Lord. And notice he sent Eliakim, who was over the household, Shebna the scribe, and the elders and the priests, covered with sackcloth, to Isaiah the prophet. So he not only runs to the house of the Lord, but he runs basically, go ask the pastor to pray. What does the word say about this type thing? Now, again, a little bit different because it's a prophet. But again, give me the kind of idea. Go to the prophet. Find out what he says about this. The son of Amoz, Isaiah. And they said to him, thus says Hezekiah, this day is a day of trouble and rebuke and blasphemy. Again, trouble and rebuke from the enemy, but also blasphemy because they were saying, your God can't deliver you. They were challenging God. Now, by the way, and we'll see, he brings this up in a minute. If you're ever in a place where you need God to move in a great way and somebody in your situation has challenged God, that's a great place to be. It really is. If they challenge you, okay, well, God, I need your help. Please help, Lord. I hope you intervene. You don't know if you will, what's going to happen. I don't know what your will is in this. But when they challenge God, God's going to defend his name. And whenever I hear somebody, you'll challenge God and say, you know what, well, you're not going to be able to do this. I can share a couple of stories here since we've been just in the building. I'm not going to take the time right now, but we've had situations come up where people say, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't put a road on the property. They told us at one point, and we're not going to let you put a road on. There's no way you can put a road on it. So we're landlocked. What do you mean you can't have a road on it? We've got the property or whatever. And so then it's like, okay, Lord, it's your property, and you said we were to be here. They're saying that we can't do this. Well, they're basically telling you can't do it. It's like, I don't know how long it was. Another a week goes by or whatever, and they're calling in asking us, we need to use part of your property down the Low River or something. And I said, okay, that's great, but we need a road. Okay, you got a deal. I mean, God always works it out. He does. I remember we had somebody in the old building when we lived down there in the at the first building that we had. We put all the money into it. We moved into it. We knew that God had told us to do it. God sent us there. God said, go, whatever. We were ready to open up. We had that week to get our permit open up or whatever. And there was somebody that was opposing us from getting our permit that was stopping it at the city level. And, you know, I want to be careful how I say this, but I remember thinking, you're not going to stop us. If it's me doing it, that's one thing. And that person died that week of a heart attack. And they gave us our permit. Now, I'm not saying God kills people for us. Don't get me wrong. All I'm saying is I've seen God do miracles when somebody gets in the way of what he's doing. Now, if it's something I'm doing, it's kind of like, okay, Lord, you got to help me out of this mess because I've done something really foolish. But when it's something God's doing, nobody can stop him. And so what's happening here with Hezekiah is God said, yeah, in a minute, God's going to say, look, they blaspheme me. So I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to do this. And Hezekiah is going to, again, go to the Lord, and you're going to hear that answer from him. And so he says, notice this. He says, this blasphemy has taken place, for the children have come to birth, but there's no strength to bring them forth. Again, it's, imagine that. You're trying to have your child, but you don't have any more ability to have the baby. You know, what are we going to do? And so he says, it may be that the Lord your God will hear the words of the Rabshakeh, whom the master of the king of Assyria has sent to reproach the living God, and will rebuke the words of which the Lord your God has heard. Therefore, lift up your prayer for the remnant that is left. In other words, hey, this is between him and God. He's challenging the Lord here. So the servants of King Hezekiah came to Isaiah, and Isaiah said to them, thus you shall say to your master, thus says the Lord, do not be afraid of the words which you have heard, with which the servants of the king of Assyria have blasphemed me. So this is like good news to hear. It's like, they're not against you, Hezekiah, they're against me. Surely I will send a spirit upon him, and he shall hear a rumor and return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land. And then the Rabshakeh returned and found the king of Assyria warring against Libna, for he heard that he had departed from Lachish. And the king heard concerning Tikhah, king of Ethiopia, that he's come out to make war with you. And so when he heard it, he sent messengers to Hezekiah, saying, thus you shall speak to the king of Judah, saying, do not let your God whom you trust deceive you, saying, Jerusalem shall not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Look, you have heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all the lands by utterly destroying them. And shall you be delivered? Have the gods of the nations delivered those from my fathers that my fathers have destroyed, Gozan and Haran and Rezeph, and the people of Eden who were in Telassar? Where's the king of Hamath, the king of Arpad, the king of the city of Sepharvaim, Hena and Iva? In other words, he's saying, look, again, I just want to remind you, all these other kingdoms were not able to stop us. They couldn't do anything. You're not going to be able to stop us either. Don't depend on your God. You don't have a chance. And Hezekiah's already going, hey, my God's already spoken here. You're the one in big trouble. But notice this, and here's, I love what he does here. And Hezekiah received the letter from the hand of the messengers, that is this threatening letter, and he read it, and Hezekiah went up to the house of the Lord and spread it before the Lord. What a great thing to do. I love this. He takes the letter and he lays it out and goes, Lord, look what they're saying about you. Look what they're saying. Guys, do that. If you have some threatening letter in your life, some threatening situation, something that is wrong and you know is not in God's will or you believe it's not, spread it out before the Lord. And if you literally want to bring it here to the building and walk in here, not now would be a good time, but when we're not having service, you want to come spread it out and pray to the Lord, do it.
Thank you for tuning in as we come to the table. We're a ministry of Pastor Mark Kirk at Calvary Knoxville in Knoxville, Tennessee. Pastor Mark has been continuing his series verse by verse through the book of Isaiah. In the first section of this book, we've seen warnings about what will happen to Israel if the nation fails to turn back to God. While in the second half, we catch a glimpse of how there is hope of a new creation even after destruction and exile. But scattered throughout the entire book of Isaiah are prophecies about the Messiah. God's servant is going to be sent to earth to restore mankind's relationship with God and expand the covenant made with the nation of Israel to the entire world. We know that Jesus is that very Messiah prophesied in the book of Isaiah. And you and I are proof that his death and resurrection made it possible for anyone who calls on his name to be part of God's eternal family. If you'd like to learn more about what it's like to live in community with other members of God's family, we'd love to invite you to an in-person service at Calvary Knoxville. To find out service times, just visit us online at thewaymedia.net and click on the Calvary Knoxville button to be redirected to the church website. You'll also find resources like past messages from Pastor Mark and a broadcasting schedule so you can learn about the other broadcasts we offer to help you grow stronger in your walk with Christ. This world is difficult to traverse on your own, but we hope these simple resources can help you gain confidence as you follow Christ. Tune in next time for another edition of Come to the Table. Come to the Table is a radio outreach ministry of Calvary Knoxville.